I was obsessed with David Letterman's show. Like, that show and the comedy in it, people don't understand now. There was nothing like that. It was revolutionary. It was nothing like that. Right? It didn't exist.
Because, I mean, I was obsessed with, like, Carson. I would just watch any stand-up on Carson. Like, Carson, then this thing came along, and it was like, what?
It was a whole new level.
Yeah.
You know, the episode where Dave is sitting there, and he wants to get his mic cord. He needs a hole for his mic, and they drill it in real time while Paul's playing tinkly piano music. And I'm watching this going, holy shit.
That is the very funny, great comedy writer, Spike Ferriston, talking about the inspiration that is David Letterman. For him, for me, for a lot of younger generation comedians. Great conversation with Spike about comedy, how he got started in the business, his YouTube car show with Jerry Seinfeld. Before we get to that, I was watching the news, and a couple of times I saw recently, you know, some serious bad criminals being extradited from either a country to the U.S. or from one state to another. And I noticed they always get to fly private. How is that? They're freaking criminals. What's the... I don't fly private. They're criminals. They need to suffer. They should fly the way I have to fly. Economy. Just, you know, get them to the airport. Make them go through long line of security. Make sure they have a water bottle in their bag. Then they've got to throw the bottle out and go back through security again. Or have their bag, you know, inspected. And then make them run to the gate, only to find out that their flight's been delayed 4 hours and they have to go and pay $32 for a soggy tuna fish sandwich that's been sitting in cellophane for 4 days, then go back to the gate, then get on the plane, and then pull away from the tarmac for about 50 yards and then stop because there's a mechanical problem, and then sit on the tarmac for 4 hours. Only to find out that they need a new plane, then get off the plane, then go into the terminal, sleep on the floor, get up the next morning, the plane's ready to go, a storm comes through, they have to buy more soggy tuna fish sandwiches, and eventually he gets back on the plane, the plane takes off, the plane's diverted, doesn't get to his destination, ends up 7 states away. When he finally gets to his destination, 2 days after that, his luggage is in Tahiti. That, to me, is how you extradite a serious criminal, not private. All right, enjoy this conversation with Spike. He's awesome. I'm on tour. Go to paulmercurio.com. You can see my dates. We're doing Permission to Speak, my Broadway show directed by Frank Oz. We're out with that. Please follow me at Paul Mercurio on social media. This is a really fun conversation with Spike. I think you're going to really enjoy it. He's a great guy, very funny, and enjoy it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week, a returning guest. He had such a great time. He demanded to come back. No. Very, very funny guy. Great guy. Amazing tennis player.
You've never seen me play tennis.
He can multitask. He talks and drinks coffee at the same time. You don't want to mess with this guy. A great, terrific comedy writer. One of the best in the business. Pedigree, SNL, The Simpsons, the little show that could, the Seinfeld, may have heard of that. Also had a great talk show, which, by the way, I loved, and I was bummed that they did not continue it on Fox.
That was really great.
And it's Spike Ferriston. Great to have you on again, buddy.
Yeah, it's good to be here with you. Good morning.
And we're promoting and talking about your current show on YouTube, Spike's Car Radio with Jerry Seinfeld. It drops every Wednesday in this really terrific car-centric show. And I want to talk about that, obviously. But, you know, the last time we talked, I didn't realize this, and I kind of went back and kind of dusted this off your bio. Could you tell the story really quickly about how you kind of got into comedy with your Berklee School of Music and you dropped the light bulbs and everything? I assume that's a true story.
That is a true story. You know, you get to this point in your career, you know, and you look back at these little moments, you go, man, they're just these little tiny moments that get you where you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have boys now that are teenagers and they're, you know, one of them's off to college in a couple of years. And I'm like, pay attention to the tiny little taps on the shoulder. And this is like one of those stories. It's, you know, I'm at Berklee College of Music. I'm a music production and engineering. I'm a guy who's going to maybe score movies, maybe, or maybe be the guy who's working the sliders. But I've already accepted I'll probably be a music teacher in my hometown of West Bridgewater, and that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with that.
By the way, I'm from Rhode Island. We're neighbors. I grew up.
Right. Tiverton, down by Tiverton there. I was born in Fall River. So
There you go.
That's and I had that place. Accent. I had that accent back then. And I was obsessed with David Letterman's show. Like that show and the comedy in it, people don't understand now. There was nothing like that. It was revolutionary. It was nothing like that. It didn't exist.
Because I mean, I was obsessed with like Carson. I would just watch any stand-up on Carson. Like Carson, then this thing came along and it was like, what?
It was a whole new level.
Yeah.
You know, the episode where Dave is sitting there and he wants to get his mic cord. He needs a hole for his mic and they drill it in real time while Paul's playing tinkly piano music. And I'm watching this going, holy shit.
Yeah. The one where he goes to like he brings a bouquet of flowers to like the NBC head and the security throws him out. Like,
that was at GE. That was years later, but he was breaking the idea of Johnny Carson's show every night. And I was obsessed, like literally obsessed in the wrong kind of like show up at Dave's door kind of way. Like I just went, I gotta work on this show somehow. And you know, I was in the dorms one night. It was a Saturday night. We're all drinking beers and it was like midnight and we're just bored. And I get the bright idea to go, hey, why don't we take some fluorescent light bulbs out from the hallway and throw them out the window down in the sidewalk, which we do. And, you know, not surprisingly, Monday, they call me in and they go, you know, you're the RA, right? You're the guy in charge of the floor for the students. I go, yeah. And he goes, is this you throwing light bulbs out there? I go, yeah. And they go, you're out of here. And they didn't kick me out of school, but they kicked me out of the dorms. And it was shortly after I was watching Dave and they're doing a tower drop with fluorescent light bulbs. And I went, wow, this guy's figured out how to get paid to do what I just got. And it was really that simple. It was really just cold, you know, unemotional logic.
Yeah.
I need to go work for him.
Yeah. That's how it started. Yeah.
But I'm a college student and I don't have any connections to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I was bartending at Legal Seafoods a few blocks away. And one day this woman walks in, Harriet, with a Letterman varsity jacket. I said, where did you get that? She goes, oh, I just broke up with a guy who does graphics for SNL and Letterman in New York. And I goes, oh, how does he feel about you still? Do you break up with him or did he break up with you? And he goes, I broke up with him. And I'm like,
can you get back together with him, please?
One more phone call. Just one more. I would really love to intern.
You guys are made for each other. Come on, reconsider the relationship.
I'm still stunned that she did this. She
did it.
She called and she got me that internship. Yeah.
Wow. Such a great story. And that led to everything else. That's amazing. I want to get to the show, but real quick, you're so on point, and I got to tell my son the same thing. It's the little things. The way I got started in this is I was an attorney on Wall Street, and I was writing jokes as a hobby, obsessed with writing for, among other shows, The Letterman Show, to the point where I did a writing submission, and I literally made copies for, I figured out all the writers, and I sent. Now it's so inappropriate now that I'm in the business. I sent copies to every single writer, the head writer, like everybody. And I never got called in, but I was writing.
Which writers did you send them to?
This was like this. I got to go back and look. It was really pretty early.
But it's like Steve O'Donnell's crew. Like,
yeah, those guys. Yeah, that like early on.
I bet you that you made their day that day. Look at this insane human, because
I worked at a pretty big law firm. We had all, so I Xeroxed everything late at night, and I got all these yellow envelopes, and I hand wrote them, and I carried them over like at night because I didn't want anybody to see me in my suit. And I was doing merger and acquisition deals. I was working at a big law firm, and I just was writing jokes as a hobby, and I was pulling another all-nighter on a hostile tender offer, and we got invited to a private function where Jay Leno was a private entertainment. And I'm like, I don't have time, but you know what? I'm going to go for like an hour. And I stood up over my computer and I just remember looking down and I went, ah, fuck it. And I hit the print button and I printed all my jokes out. And I went up to Leno after his performance and I went, well, I don't know if you need jokes, but I have jokes and I'm never going to use them. And you can have them. And he was like, okay, ready. He takes the jokes. And 2 days later, he called me. And you said, I read your jokes and I'll hire you to send in jokes for the Tonight Show monologue.
No way.
And I'll pay you $50 a joke. And
that's
then the following week, he called me and he did one of my jokes on the Tonight Show. Called me to tell me he was going to do it. Such a mensch. And then did it. And it just blew my head off my shoulders.
You and I have this in common.
Yeah. This thing happened that I think probably happened with you was, I have been watching this box my whole life and being moved by these jokes by other people that they did it or wrote them or both. And suddenly my words made people react. And it was like, it took me a long time to deconstruct what happened. Cause I think I was not being fulfilled creatively, but anyway, I'm sorry. I'm making
no, you weren't. It's like smoke and crack. That moment you're talking about is a profound moment.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to understand, but there's no internet at that point.
No.
There's no way. There's just this one box in your kitchen or your living room.
Yeah.
If your parents were like mine, they were focused on it like that. And in some ways, like I think back, like I was just trying to get my parents' attention by getting inside the box and doing that. And I had that same thing with Jay, the same exact story. I didn't go up to him, but I was asked, I think Larry Jacobson, the comedy writer from Letterman, who you probably sent that envelope to, he hooked us up together. I wrote the joke and then suddenly I'm watching the Tonight Show and there's my joke. It was mind blowing.
It was, right?
Mind blowing. Really, it's just like, I can't believe I contributed in this way. You know,
the only other person I know that I've had this experience and like this with Jay, and it's I'm going to move on to your show. I'm sorry, but like it was moment, like you said, like if I didn't stand, I could still see it. I put my overcoat on because it was winter and I stand up like this and I'm like, I had like this thick of jokes, right? Password and file at work. And I hit the button. If I did, that was that one motion that took me out of Wall Street to this.
Yeah,
and then years later, real quick. Yeah. And then years later, there's a reunion for my firm like 2 years ago. An old guy comes up to me. He goes, you remember me? I go, what? He goes, I'm Alan Bendis. I go, oh, Alan. Alan ran the information processing department at the firm. He goes, you know, a lot of nights you made me laugh, Mercurio. I go, why? I broke into your passworded file and I would read your jokes. You were pretty goddamn funny. Let me tell you, like, it was crazy. Like, all right. Anyway, let's talk about your show. So we got to do this again and have more time. So tell me, I know from when we talked before that you were really into cars, but this has really seemed to be kind of the central thing you're doing now. And you're doing the show with Jerry. And there's so many questions I have, which is like, and I have other people, like I know Chris Mazzilli, who's close with Jerry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they, like, so what is it about cars and Porsches in particular that sort of get you guys so dialed in? And tell the story about the Le Mans, Steve McQueen 917 Porsche. You just have an episode that just came out about that with Jerry, which is a really great story.
Oh, that's insane. I mean, that's early 2000s driving down La Cienega in L.A. and seeing Steve McQueen's race car from the movie Le Mans sitting in a window on Wilshire in La Cienega and going, what the hell? You know, it's a great movie. But why is that car sitting there calling Jerry up going, I think I just saw Steve McQueen's 917. He goes, you're kidding. And, you know, a couple weeks later, and we have a bunch of stories like this. You know, he obviously lives in New York. I live in Los Angeles. Couple weeks later, he's out. He goes, let's go look at that car. And sure enough, there it is. It's the most intact 917. It's the camera car from the movie, Solar Productions, Steve McQueen. And it's got mount
on the front. Yeah, explain to people what camera car means for people.
Camera car means it's a, well, this was an actual Porsche race car from the early 70s, but it had steel mounts that they attached cameras on. And it was not only used in the movie where you can see it going around the track and racing, it was used to keep up with the other race cars it was shooting. It literally had a camera, movie camera on the front of the nose, and it drove around. And because it was the camera car, it wasn't raced afterwards and crashed. It was like, it's just this intact race car. And at the time, race cars were worth nothing. The automotive community didn't care about these things because
they were
raced and crashed and rebuilt and new engines. They were messes. So they would sit just on used car lots, right? But it was right before the Steve McQueen craziness happened for guys. And I said to Jerry, I don't know, this Steve McQueen, who we all love, it seems like, you know, his sunglasses, his other thing, it's bigger than just the automotive community. It's kind of in our kind of entertainment thing, and maybe you should buy this. And he goes, well, it's $1 million. And I said, well, I think you made a little money on that show we just did together. And he was a little nervous about, he goes, why would I own this? It doesn't feel like something I should take care of. And I was like, I get that. Cause you know, he's kind of a humble guy. And I said, but you are developing into this Porsche guru. This is your brand. You have this collection and you're an historian of it. And he really does.
God, I remember the episodes of his apartment when that Porsche that in midair. That poster. Like this goes back for years.
Because we were just always there like you know, you're just working all the time. So we weren't there on the show working. We were there looking through car magazines and buying cars that frequently we only drove to and from work. But that was fun. And that's kind of where it all began. So he bought this car and kept this car for 25 years. And recently sold it for a lot of money. You know, the estimates I think I've read are over $25 million. So it was a nice investment. An amazing thing.
You have to watch the episode because he's funny the way he kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he sent it out to Meekum to be auctioned. And then there was a big story that he had turned down $25 million. Yeah. But it turned out not to be true. There was some private buyer who didn't want to be on the auction stage. Which does happen. It just happened with me with a motorcycle where someone's just like, I just want to buy it and I just want to come over and meet you and I don't want to be on the show. And that's fine.
So I get the sense, you know, I've talked, like I said, Chris Mazzilli, for people listening, he owns Gotham Comedy Club. He's actually a good friend. And we were doing stand-up together because years ago he started doing as a stand-up. And in knowing Chris, I don't know you as well. And I only know Jerry in passing, but it's not really about the money to me. It seems like it's just, there's just this ephemeral passion, this thing about these animate objects. I don't know. Explain to me, because I've got a couple of other friends that are like really into motorcycles and collect and talk and go to shows. And like, what is it? Like what? I'm curious.
We're a tribe of drivers. And I think you'll be able to relate to it very simply. When Jerry's out or when I'm hanging out with my friends like this weekend, we get together in whatever cars, take a nice drive out to Malibu, sit and have coffee like you would do on the road as a comedian.
Yeah.
And make each other laugh for an hour and then drive home. And that, it feels like a vacation to us for some reason. We would rather do that than go to the Bahamas with our families. I don't know what that is. And in the course of doing that, you know, people are always kind of leaning an ear over wherever we are trying to listen in. And then eventually I said, we should really record this. I think there's something entertaining about what we're doing. I don't know what it is, but let's try it. And that was, you know, 8 years ago. And now we launched on YouTube recently and you can see the cars that we're talking about. Big manufacturers give us their babies to review and we tell the truth because this isn't our real job. You know, this is just 1 hour of my week. I'm working in entertainment most of the time. This is just my fun hour. That's all that the show is. My 1 hour a week where I just get to do whatever I want to do. Whatever story I'm interested in talking about, whatever cars we're interested in showing everybody and telling the truth about, that's what we're going to do. And no one messes with it. And surprisingly, it's working. Like no one's
well. I think it's working because I think it's working because nobody messes with it. You know, I mean,
we've both worked
in the business long enough to know. Like some people want to put their fingerprints on things and it makes it worse instead of better. Not necessarily all the time, but the thing that's great about the show is it does feel like I'm sort of just listening in on some buddies hanging out talking about a bunch of stuff, mainly cars. But it's not anybody watching this show or listening. You don't have to go, oh, I'm not into cars, so I'm not going to go listen. No, I mean, it's just incredibly funny, smart people, clearly with chemistry, like,
you know,
and you've got a sort of a cast of regulars, and tell people about them a little bit. Like, I know you've got a couple of, you got a personal injury lawyer and you got a couple of other people too.
Paul Zuckerman is a very good friend of mine and my former neighbor who is, he would have been like us. He would have been a comedian or a comedy writer had someone intervened all these days back in Long Island years ago. But when I met him, I was like, boy, this guy is so funny. And he's a personal injury lawyer and very, very successful, but his whole, he's not a lawyer in the classic sense. Like when I look at his emails, he writes things like, I'm going to hang you over a building until the money falls. He's writing that to other lawyers. And I'm like, what is that? And he goes, "That this is how I do law work. I advocate. I don't give a shit about legalese. And my clients appreciate that. They feel represented." And he's very funny. And being from Long Island, I said, you know, you're probably the only person I would say this about. I'm going to introduce you to Jerry Seinfeld. I think he's going to like you. I think you're funny enough and you like cars enough. I think you're going to slot right into our little friend group. And sure enough, he did right off the
bat.
You know, there was a little shaping, a little Jerry shaping. Oh, I don't need to hear that story. You know, he sets the parameters for what he thinks we should all talk about. And then we tend to knock those walls down. But
they go for it.
You know, the three of us, those tend to be everyone's favorite shows because, you know, Jerry can really let his hair down and just be one of the guys. And then we also, you know, for street cred in the car community, we have Matt Farah, who's an editor at large for Road and Track, and Johnny Lieberman, who we like to beat on from Motor Trend. And, you know, it's really whoever's around on Friday. Who's around? Who's here? Let's go do a show.
That's hilarious.
So we're doing,
It's got that feel. It's got
we're like you. We get guests pitched to us and we'll bring on Titus Welliver, who's promoting Bosch, who's also part of our kind of cars and coffee crew, and or Jay comes on or Corolla comes on. It's, you know, it's just, I wish I could do three of them a week. I love doing it, but we do one and we're happy people are paying attention to it.
Corolla's got some cool cars. I've been to his studio when I've done his show and he's got those like basically like the offices and then it smells like gasoline while he's sitting hilarious. In the studio because he's got like
so
three
good.
Vintage cars. It's the best. Listen, I know you got to jump and have more of these, but I'm going to reconnect with you and send you an email or whatever. Let's try to do one of these where we don't have to time limitations. I'd love, there's so much more I want to talk to you about and catch up and everything. And, tell people where they can see the show. It's on YouTube, but give them specifically where they can go so they can check it out.
Well, that's it. YouTube, Spike's Car Radio. And then if you want to listen to it, if you don't want to see the cars, we're everywhere where you get podcasts.
All right. Sounds good. Spike, great to have you on. Congrats on the show. It's awesome.
Thank you.
One else is doing a show like this, which is a hard thing to say these days with so much content out there. So that's a tribute to you. Always great to have you on, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Paul.
There you go. That's Spike Ferriston. Awesome guy. Great conversation. Really cool show. You should check it out on YouTube, Spike's Car Radio. Go to paulmercurio.com. Follow me at Paul Mercurio on social. You can see all the dates I'm doing, and we will see you next week. Thanks, everybody.